Nothing lasts forever. And also the present polarization will pass away. But for the time being, one must say that the rational conduct of politics by the American government is seriously impaired because the range of action is narrowed down, because actions must not be in effective conflict with the utopian fantasies. How far this restriction of the American range of action through the intellectuals who have lost contact with the reality will indeed become a danger to the country, only the future can show. Certainly what is present is a huge force of aggressive intellectual dishonesty which penetrates at least the academic and other public strata of society and will require correction in one form or another when a situation should ever become really critical. Once certain structural elements in reality become differentiated and are raised into articulate consciousness, they develop a life of their own in history. One of the important insights gained by the philosophers, as well as by the prophets of Israel and the early Christians, is the movement in reality toward a state beyond its present structure. As far as the individual human being is concerned, this movement obviously can be consummated only in and through death. The great discovery of the classic philosophers was that man is not a mortal, but a being engaged in a movement toward immortality. The Athanatizein, the immortalizing as the philosopher's existence, is a central experience in both Plato and Aristotle. In the same manner, the great insight of Paul was the movement of reality beyond its present structure of death into the imperishable reality that will succeed it through the grace of God, that is the state of aftarsia. This movement toward a state of being beyond the structure of being experienced as real in man's existence in life and death injects a further tension into the problems of existential order, insofar this order of existence has to be organized in such a manner as to lead towards the state of imperishable immortality. Not everybody, however, is satisfied with the organization of his existence in the direction of this movement, but prefers a shortcut and certainty right in this life. The expectation that the structure of reality can be transfigured in such a manner that it reaches an imperishable perfection is therefore a constant in history as soon as the problem is differentiated. Already the Jewish apocalyptic thinkers expected that the misery of successive empires, of which they were the victims, would soon be superseded by a divine intervention that would produce the state of glory and the end of empire. Even in Paul, the expectation of a second coming in the time of the living is only slowly revised under the impact of the experience of man dying before the second coming, and the metastatic expectation of the new world succeeding the old one on short order for those who live now is a permanent factor of disturbance in social and political reality. The movement had been suppressed by the main church with more or less success, at least so far that the apocalyptic expectations were pushed into sectarian fringe movements. But beginning with the Reformation, these fringe movements move more and more into the center of the stage, and the replacement of Christian movements by secularist expectations has not changed the structure in the least. The important new factor that becomes increasingly effective is the replacement of an expectation of divine intervention by direct human action that will produce the new world. Marx, for instance, expects from the blood intoxication of a violent uprising the transformation of man into Superman. When the expected transformation through blood intoxication in 1848 did not occur, he later settled for a transitional period which he calls the dictatorship of the proletariat. But at least he was still clear about it that external actions, like the taking over of the means of industrial production by the government, did not produce a transformation. On the upper level of Marxists, that is still quite clear. The establishment of a communist government is an external event which has for its purpose to produce in due course the expected transfiguration into the superhuman perfection. Marx knew perfectly well that the establishment of a communist government per se meant no more than the aggravation of the evils of a capitalist system to their highest potential. On the vulgarian level of later Marxist sectarians and contemporary utopians, the understanding of this problem has disappeared and been replaced by something like a magic of action. The eschatological state of perfection will be reached through direct violence. The experience of the tension in reality, through the experience of a movement in the reality beyond its structure, has been transformed into the magic vulgarity of aggressive destruction of social order. Still, so this experience is exposed to the vulgarian transformations just indicated, the experience is real, or it could not have this permanently motivating effect even in its deformations. Hence, every philosophy of history must take into account that the process of history is not a process within the world, but in the in-between of this worldly and otherworldly reality. Moreover, this in-between character of the process is experienced not as a structure for all times, but as a movement that will eschatologically end in a state beyond the in-between and beyond time. No philosophy of history can be considered to be seriously dealing with the problems of history unless it recognizes the fundamental structure of eschatology in the process. The understanding of the eschatological problem requires a revision of the deformations which the concepts of classic philosophy have suffered at the hands of interpreters who want to have a fixed nature of man and want to consider history to have a constant structure. The classic philosophers were quite aware of the problems of eschatology, as I have just indicated. They knew that they were engaged in the practice of dying, and that the practice of dying meant the practice of immortalizing. The expansion of this experience into the understanding of history makes it, of course, impossible to erect concepts like the nature of man into constants in reality. This, however, and there lies the difficulty of understanding the problem, does not mean that the nature of man does change in history. In this very process of history, precisely it does not change, but becomes luminous for its eschatological destiny. And the process of its becoming luminous and the tension being raised to conscious awareness adds to the understanding of human nature and its problems. But it does not abolish human nature in the here and now of spatio-temporal existence. The eschatological expectation and its consciousness is an ordering factor in existence, and the understanding of man's existence as that of, in the Christian sense, the viator, the wanderer, the pilgrim towards the eschatological reality. But this pilgrimage still is a pilgrim's progress in this world. This problem of the eschatological tension in existence, in its dimensions of person, society, and history, is not a matter of theoretical insight for the philosopher, but a practical question. As I have said, Plato and Aristotle were very much aware that the action of philosophizing is a process of immortalizing in this world. This action does not stop with Plato and Aristotle, but it goes on and has to deal with the concrete problems which the philosopher encounters in his own position in the historical situation of his time. If the classic philosophers had to work themselves out of the difficulties created by a dying myth and an active sophistic aggressiveness, the philosopher in the 20th century has to struggle with what Whitehead called the climate of opinion. In his concrete work, he has to absorb the enormous advances of the sciences, both natural and historical, and to relate them to the understanding of existence. That is a considerable labor, considering the amounts, especially of historical materials, that become known in our time. A new picture of history develops, which requires conceptual penetration of the materials. And to do this labor is the task of the philosopher today, as well as the communication of his analysis and the results, if he happens to be a professor in a university, to the students. Both these chores of keeping up with the problems in the society of his fellow scholars and communicating results to the general public as well as to students is a concrete process through which the philosopher participates in the eschatological movement of history and conforms to the Platonic Aristotelian task of the practice of dying. The conclusion of the interviews.